When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 272. I'm going to be performing a bunch after my comedy special airs, which is called Mandroid, which airs November 10th on Comedy Central. It's at 10 or 11 at night. It's a Saturday night. Ask your DVRs. And then I'm going to be going on the road. So I will be, at the beginning of December, I will be at Zany's in Nashville, and I believe I'll be at Zany's in Chicago. And then early next year, I will be at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, Indiana. So if you go to nerdist.com/calendar, you can find out information about that business. I am very excited to thank Carbonite for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. The Nerdist Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. This guy was absolutely delightful.
I'm gonna fucking throw lukewarm chai latte on you for that. Stop making me hit you with a pillow.
Please don't hit me. Carbonite.
Yeah, I would like to fucking thank our sponsor, Carbonite. As a matter of fact, Carbonite is online backup that is fucking reliable, Chloe.
I believe you because you only said it.
It's way more reliable than having a girlfriend who makes fun of your intros.
Oh, I think I'm pretty reliable.
Say that whole exchange with Chloe was an absolute delight. What if I were to lose it somehow? Because of a hard drive crash, I'd never be able to hear those delightful snorts. Carbonite Online Backup will protect all of your files. You know, if you're a sometimes or seldom backupper, then you don't have to even worry about it. It'll just run silently in your background, and then whenever tragedy strikes, you'll have access to all your files. You can access them from any computer. You can access them through tablet, smartphone. So Carbonite.com is the best place to go to back up all of your stuff. Plans start at $59 a year. Get your free trial today at Carbonite.com with the offer code Nerdist and get 2 bonus months with a purchase. That is Carbonite.com and use the offer code Nerdist. This episode of the podcast is Andrew Lincoln, a.k.a. Rick Grimes, from a show called The Walking Dead, which you may have heard of. By the way, Talking Dead, back on. We air at 11 p.m., 10 p.m. Central, so Walking Dead airs, and then that same episode re-airs, and then we're on after that. That's how it's working. And this next week's episode is Will Wheaton. And I don't know who the other guest is because it's somehow tied to whatever the episode is about, which I haven't seen yet because I'm not going to watch it till Sunday. So I don't even know who it's going to be. It's Will and a surprise cast member, I'm told. I don't know who it is. I have no idea who it's going to be. So just in terms of this particular episode and spoilers, this was during when they were doing junkets for the first episode back for this season. So there aren't any spoilers about this current season because I hadn't seen the episode yet. It was actually the day of the premiere. But if you have not watched The Walking Dead up to this point, there are several. So I'm just giving you a big heads up that there are spoilers up to season 3, but not including season 3. So that's it. I mean, listen, if you're going to listen to a podcast with Andrew Lincoln, you probably have watched The Walking Dead at this point, so I'm sure you're well covered, but I just want everyone to be fairly warned that that's the case. And if you scrub through this and then something gets spoiled for you, that is your fucking fault, my friend. You're not even going to hear me chastise you that it's your fault because you scrubbed through this. So see, sometimes it does pay to listen to the intros, doesn't it? Alright, so what are you shaking your head at me for?
You're already telling them what they should be upset about.
Well, no, I'm just saying.
You're expecting the trolls already.
Because.
What?
I've been slapped a lot by the internet. And that's what happens.
Then get used to being slapped by the internet. Learn to like the slaps.
Whoa, hey.
What?
I'm not gonna have Stockholm syndrome with the internet. I'm just warning people. So stuff's not spoiled.
Well, good. I'm glad that you've gone through every possible spoiler.
Well, I'm glad we sort of resolved this. Nurse Podcast number 272.
I know that Carbonite can back up your information, but can it back that ass up?
Yeah, it can back that ass up.
Good.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
New characters that you know that he, you know, the Daryl Dicks, the Dixon brothers as well.
Yeah.
It's great.
Okay, well, Chris, can you just say your name for me one more time? And
Chris Hardwick. We got it.
Are you ready?
Anytime.
We're rolling. President Andrew Lincoln. I'm so excited to finally get you on not only this podcast thing, but The Talking Dead as well.
No, it's a pleasure to be here.
You are. Considering that you're in almost every scene of the show, sometimes it's tough to pin you down. This show has become your life the last couple of years, I imagine.
Yeah, it more than that. It's become bigger than my life. Yeah, it is. It's, I mean, not only a sort of time commitment, but just the whole thing. This phenomenon that's happened with the show has been bewildering and beautiful and extraordinary. You know, we film in a bubble down there, and then we come and do this, and we realize the kind of responsibility to tell this great story.
It's sort of, because I have a bunch of friends who are British actors as well, and it's the same. It's like with the Doctor Who cast. They go, well, we film in Cardiff, and then we come to the States. We have no concept that there's a fan base, and then everyone freaks out.
Well, we do have the luxury of Comic-Con, as you well know.
Of course.
You know, we get thrown in there, and so we get this kind of extraordinary, you know, overwhelming sort of sense of, a loyal and fervent fan base, you know.
Is it uncomfortable at all? Or are you like, no, please?
You know what? It was the first time I just was in sort of shock by it all, just because of the scale of it. And also just to realize those fans, you know, and how intelligent and smart and how much they wanted it to be right, you know. The second... But then the beautiful thing was, it was one of the great things, because I don't watch it, but when they played the trailer, I could hear a roar happen, you know, when they saw the trailer, or, you know, the first ever trailer. And I just thought, oh, thank God, we're doing it right. You know what I mean? Because that's the way you want, you know, you don't want to let people down. You have this huge responsibility. And also, you know, I'm not a southern cop, you know, I'm a guy from a soggy island off the coast of, you know, Europe, and I didn't want to mess it up, you know. That's what Sarah Wayne Kelly's always says to me. The first thing she said to me, great to meet you, Andy, don't F it up.
Oh, no pressure.
Yeah, I know, thanks.
No pressure at all. I know, well, especially the fans of something like Walking Dead, like you said, you know, they're super passionate. They love the comic book.
Yeah.
And there's so much room to be like, oh, you, and they loved it. I mean, like, that first trailer, we just crowded around the AMC booth at Comic-Con and just watched it over and over, and we're like, this show is, you can tell it's going to be groundbreaking.
Yeah, well, it's AMC, and it's Frank Darabont, and it's all of the Greg Nicotero, it's all of this, Gail Ann Hurd, who just got the star.
Got a star on the walk.
How cool was that?
Amazing.
And just magnificent team of people, you know, and the writers, Robert, and it just had, I don't know, the stars aligned for this thing, you know, and but you can never sort of anticipate this kind of reaction, which has been bewildering, you know, and extraordinary. So
it's not really like this in England, is it? Like, if you're on it.
No. I mean, I've been in a few shows back there, but there's something happening with this that is a little bit different, because I did a show called This Life, which was a supposedly a zeitgeist show, whatever that means. But this is different because it's different generations that seem to be watching it. And the thing I love about it, it reminds me of when I went to, I saw Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom when I was a kid. And that scene when he hasn't got his gun, you know what I mean? When he's being chased. And everybody roared in the cinema, you know? And I love the fact that people watch this show in groups. And it has that sort of feel. You know, there's an old-fashioned sort of popcorn style to it, which I just love. You know, there's an honorable old-fashioned feeling to it, you know, of right and wrong. But it's much more twisted than that, you know?
Well, and I think it's that very dynamic that you're talking about is something that makes, that allows our show to work. Because The Walking Dead is so dense with drama and plot stuff and human interaction and zombie drama that you need fucking therapy. Like,
you do.
You need to watch it with a group.
You do.
Because it's so much to sort through.
Yeah, and also I love the arguments. I love that people side with one. This is the way I would do it. And people, and that, like you say, you build on that sort of, you know, that commitment, that involvement that the audience has with these characters. And everybody has their own sort of special way of doing things and relates. And that the family, you know, it's a... what I realized this season particularly, it's a family drama set in hell. That's what we're making. And that's... I suppose that's why families are watching it. You know what I mean? Because everybody has a voice in it.
Yeah. Well, for me, I also look at it as... a weird sociological experiment where...
Isn't that your show?
That's what I do. Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, you take seemingly normal people and you throw them into this environment and you watch their alignment change in the sense of just the ideas of good, evil, like what people have to do. It's just like what comes out when people are forced to survive.
Yeah. I think that that's... I mean, you're right. I mean, and just to see, that's why it's sort of like a Greek tragedy. It's so extreme, the world that we inhabit, but the emotional scale is so extreme as well. And people, that's why it's our jobs to make it as true as possible, even though it sounds preposterous in a zombie show. But actually, we can get away with more.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, emotionally, and that's the bit that I love about. And always what attracted me to the show was that first episode in this crazy, silent, broken world where no one's there. You have Morgan, and he tells this, and you have this extraordinary human moment that kind of just explodes in this silent landscape. And I thought, that's why we're doing it. That's why AMC have gone with this. Huge risk. Yeah. I mean, ridiculous risk. Can you imagine the pitch for this? I would love to have been in the room.
Well, he probably just dropped the comic book on there and go, we're going to do that.
Yeah.
And because, you know, especially if you read the comic, there's so much in it where you go, they'll never be able to do this on television.
Yeah.
And you guys are doing a lot of it on television.
Yeah, and certainly this season as well. There's a couple of other big characters, three characters as well that you, have I spoiled something?
No.
No, I haven't.
We know Michonne.
Michonne.
We know the governor.
And then we know that.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Which everyone, you know, again, everyone was super excited to... Michonne is such a juicy character, and she just comes along at such a great place in the story that the finale last season was...
Yeah, it's so good.
So you don't watch the show?
No, I don't, no.
Is it sort of like, you just want to keep it separate?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not the best judge. I used to watch myself, and then I realized that I was getting into the habit of doing things that I knew would work. You know what I mean? You become self-conscious, and you go, oh, when I do that, that makes me look like this. And I found myself getting into patterns of acting that I didn't like, and it became not as enjoyable. So I thought I would step completely out of it and just do the acting bit, make that as real as possible, and then hand it away.
I actually do really understand that because, you know, especially with the sort of with the stuff you're dealing with, the emotional stuff, you want it to be organic and you don't want to be thinking about it.
No, it's and so much of this show in particular is immediate. It's so, you know, like, I was just thinking about this. It's great that we jump forward in time because we cover so little ground in time, mm-hmm. when the season begins. I mean, we covered what since I woke up from the in the hospital. I think it's only about 4 weeks mm-hmm. In two seasons. So it's great to jump forward and have that, see the evolution of these people,
yeah.
or devolution, whatever you want to call it, erosion of these people, or galvanization of the group, whatever. But certainly just to jump forward is a really important plot device, I think, and also for the baby.
You know? Right. And I don't look at a show like this and think, I think one of the things that they've managed to do is the zombie outbreak feels more like, well, that's a medical thing that could happen. There's nothing supernatural about it.
Yeah.
It's just a viral, weird thing.
That's always the thing that I've maintained. This is not a spooky show.
No.
It's nothing to do with spooky, spooky. And it's, you know, that's not why people dig it, you know? And if you move into spooky, spooky, then you become, then it breaks the world. Because it is. It's a plague. That's the way I view it. It's just a plague. You know, that's the way the cop sees it. He just goes, they're this. Mm-hmm. And if we get bit, you know, it's very brutal, but that's it. It's no more than that.
I think it's also that there's so much shit going on in the world right now.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people feel like we're really only one step away from this world. Yeah, anyway, so yeah. I feel like in a way they're watching it like, we're not that far off.
Yeah. Let's get ready. Let's get some tips. Yeah. Stab your best friend. And then, yeah.
If you have to.
If you have to, you must stab your best friend and then get your child to shoot him. But no, maybe. I mean, I don't, it's funny. Most of the conversations we've had today at the junket are like, why is it? You know, people want to know what is the alchemy that makes this kind of reaction, this public reaction. And in truth, I don't know. I mean, if we did, I wouldn't be here. I'd be trying to make money somewhere else.
Sure.
You know, with great ideas to make money. But it just seems to have caught people's imaginations. And also the characters. I think it's a character-driven show. And we're really fortunate that we've got so many great actors. And the crew, I have to just keep talking about the crew because they are the same people that have been on for 3 years. They're magnificent. And their commitment, you've been on set. You've seen how hard they work. We're shooting a serialized movie on a TV schedule. And it's mind-blowing what they are able to achieve and the scale of what we're able to achieve in that schedule. I mean, they bust themselves for this show because they love it just as much. You know?
In the Atlanta summer heat.
Yeah, that's the only way we roll. As soon as it's apocalyptic, let's go.
Nicotero was like, hey man, do you want to be a zombie on the show? And I was like, that sounds awful. You're with all the prosthetic makeup, it's 100 degrees outside, it's humid, you know?
My brother-in-law did it, man, and he did. And he did 4 hours in makeup as a featured zombie. And then he chased John Bernthal up and down the street all day for 18 hours, and he didn't make the cut. he's absolutely furious. He's like, oh my God. And I had to break it to him. I went, you may not be in the show.
What?
Yeah, and he was. I keep telling him, DVD extras on the Blu-ray.
Well, no one can take the experience away from you.
No, I know. And he went, I never want to come back.
And it was really hard for me because my first instinct would be like, well, of course I want to be a zombie on the show. Yeah. But it really, the process of shooting, and I've been down there and see what you guys go through.
They're hardcore, these guys.
Yeah. I mean,
the people that people come back to do the zombies. They're like no supporting artists I've ever met. They are insane. They're like extreme, you know, extras. I mean, they love it.
Have you ever gone through the makeup just for fun?
What, the zombie?
Did they make you a zombie?
No, I don't go anywhere near those guys.
It's crazy. And then Nicotero like puts these plate-sized contacts in your eyes and you can't see anything.
I've seen those. They're wizards, those guys. They're amazing that they got the Emmy as well. Again, they're just the best in the best. We wouldn't have the show without them, you know.
Here's what I ask a lot of actors this question because it's the idea of it is really, really interesting to me. But you're basically playing most days of the week. You're in the most intense scenes that actors are usually put in. It's just life and death scenes.
Yeah.
On the run, you're fighting for your life. You're trying to protect your family. how do you kind of scrub off the emotion of that at the end of the day and then go home to your actual family and be like, hey.
Well, there's nothing as grounding as changing a diaper. I mean, right. And also, there was my acting teacher back in England who was a brilliant, Doreen Cannon, she was called Doreen Cannon. She was from America. And she always said that even in the most gut-wrenching emotional scene, it's a release. And you know, so we get to kind of exorcise these things that no one else gets to do. So actually, I get to go and kill and vent fury on innocent extras on a daily basis. And so actually, it's remarkably, I come back home, I'm remarkably relaxed. It's a great, you know, psychological workout. But you know, there are certain scenes that stay with you, like in the you haven't seen it. Nearly let one go. But there are certain scenes. Usually, the more complicated emotional domestic scenes with Sarah or with John or with the family unit. But that's my job. I mean, that's. Sure. You talk to any other actor in this town, and they would bite my hand off. To have the opportunity to do the range that I get to play as this role. That's why, you know, I like Robert. We just go, if they keep pushing, you know, Rick to the places that they're pushing him, I'd be more than happy to play this role for a while longer, you know?
And that is, we were talking a little about this before, but just Kirkman's enthusiasm and watching how excited he gets to, like you were saying, just push the characters constantly and never let up on them. It's just like these poor, hapless people just want to live their lives, and then he just throws this horrible stuff
at them. But it's great. I mean, because the comic book evolves as well, and so I think you get to, and certainly this season as well, because you've got this other the world opens up, mm-hmm. and they go, it's not just this family that we've been following, it's this as well. Then it becomes, and they're a little bit further down the line. So the thing that I like about it is that then it becomes more, if you've got space to kind of process a lot of the things that have, this trauma that they've been through, because basically they're in a war zone daily. And so they've got battle fatigue and they're kind of, you know, everybody's sort of breaking up. When you have a civilization that's relatively safe, then you can start to deal with starting over again. And I think that that's what the comic book does as well. You know, eventually the walkers become, that you adapt to that. And then it becomes about, oh, you're reinventing yourself as that, which I find incredibly interesting.
Well, also the idea that the other survivors, I don't mean the immediate group, but other survivors out in the world, are actually the dangerous, you know, like the dangerous ones.
Yeah, which I think is, you know, the thing I love about The Road, because I read, Lonesome Dove was the book I read last year for last season, and it was great, because it kind of felt that the space and the Western and all of that, you know, the beginning again, the founding, you know, the search for land very much felt right for that. And this is more like The Road this season. And The Road deals with cannibalism. You know, but that's just it. But it deals with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how extreme it is. And I think that that's very much the world that we're moving into as well. I'm not saying that there are going to be cannibals in there, but I know that in the comic book there are.
Yeah. Do you feel like I think maybe it was Glenn. I want to make sure I get the quote right, but I think it was Glenn who said that. Here we go. Glenn Mazzara said, I've always said that in a way our core group is really like the plague. For example, you know, they came in to Herschel's farm. You know, like, and he kind of, he had that perception of them of like, I don't want you to bring all this shit into my home, and you just brought all this shit into my home.
But I think that that's what you would do. I mean, if certainly, I love the relationship between Rick and Herschel. I think it's one of, I love playing scenes with him, just because he's Scott Wilson, and he's the coolest lion heart I've ever met. But also because they do recognize each other. They're very similar people, I think. They've got the stubbornness, they've got the drive, they've got the dignity, and there is a kind of honorable side that they recognize in each other. And I do think that if he'd survived this, you would be like, I mean, that's what I said at Comic-Con. I said, Rick is pushing people away. He doesn't want any more into it. He doesn't want the threat, because so much of his human so much of the threat this, certainly last season as well, was human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the bar, he's making judgment calls instantaneously now, just going, I don't trust you, you know, mm-hmm. pushing people away. And actually, by definition, by doing that, he loses his humanity.
Of course.
And I think that is the struggle. That's the kind of, you know, that's the excitement about playing this, it's that juggling. It's that you've got to go, do I go that way? It's impossible, but we'll try, you know, wrangling these impossible situations.
It's such a poetic struggle, though, because he has to shed his humanity to protect his family.
That's it.
And to protect the group.
Well, I've always said that, you know, his greatest strength is also his greatest weakness. You know, it's his wife and his child.
Yeah.
It's his driving force. It gets him out of bed with an IV, when he hasn't, you know, he's barely able to walk, but it gets him to Morgan, and then it gets him to eventually find the family, you know. And but it's also, it's his Achilles heel, you know. You make yourself vulnerable when you love in this world, you know.
Do you feel like they're the last tether that he has to the world? If he lost the entire family, do you think Rick stays in the group, or do you think he says, fuck it, and then just, like, wanders into a field?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm interested. I was always interested, and I should never have said it to the writers. I just said, I went into the writers' room, where do you think Rick's breaking point is? Never say that to a writer, because I've been punished this season. Every episode I've been punished.
Kirkman's like, yeah, we're still looking for it.
Still looking for it. Keep going. Keep on. Heard him. So I will know never to say something so foolhardy again. But I don't know is the answer, because it hasn't happened yet. But I know in the comic book that, you know, Laurie gets killed and the baby. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredibly brutal. And I don't know if that's the show we're making, you know what I mean? I don't know. You know, maybe that is I don't know.
And in true, and the way that it happens in the comic constantly, where you feel like, well, no character's safe. I think most people assume that Rick is safe, but for the most part.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't think, you know, it is a hard one to sell that this is the supposed leader, but you know, they took out John.
Yeah.
You know, well, I took out John.
But, you had no choice.
I had no choice. And Jeff DeMartin, you mean, these massive characters, you know, Emma Bell was brutal in the first season. I mean, you didn't even sort of quite get to know her, and she was so enigmatic and so brilliant an actress, you know. But I do think that it will be one of the enduring strengths of the show, is that we can do that.
Yeah.
Because then you reinvent the show.
Yeah.
Because by definition, you kill one person, the group changes and it evolves, and all the other characters move into different places.
Yeah.
And it's a very smart, very interesting way of sort of the Phoenix rising. But obviously, I hope they don't kill me.
I think Rick will be okay for a while.
Don't get me.
I think Rick's going to be okay for a while.
That kid is growing up quickly. I keep going.
You still got a few years. You still got a few years.
He's pretty good with that gun now.
Chandler, yeah, I know. He's growing up. This kid's growing up in this world. But I honestly, you know, I just think that there's a really I don't know how to say this the right way, but it's, you know, like in a movie, when a major character dies in something, there's music and it builds up. Yeah. And you're like, oh, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you read the comics or you watch the show, all of a sudden it's like, oh, that guy's dead. And you're like, wow, I wasn't even prepared for that. Like, that's such a, it feels like so analogous to just like, this is life in this world.
I think that, obviously, I when I read the scripts as well, there are a couple of things that happened this season that I was like, what, really? That's what we're doing. That, I mean, they're shocking some, and in the brutality of it. But that's certainly with episodes 1 and 2. That's what they wanted to establish. They said, "This is the world. This is what they're inhabiting now.
Yeah.
And this is where the group are." And they do, and it's very clear how extreme, and also how efficient they've become.
Yeah.
As a sort of. A single entity. They've had to be. They've had to be this kind of, organism.
From your point of view, do you think Laurie pushed Rick against? I mean, like, obviously, Shane was coming at you. Shane was coming at Rick his own, you know, his own way.
Yeah.
But Laurie was a little bit like, you know, rubbing on your back and being like, he's dangerous. You know, like, do you feel...
Yeah, I mean, I don't... I think that she... No, I mean, she said a very real thing, which is that I fear for my husband. You know, I fear he's saying that you can't lead. You can't keep me safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and bear in mind, he'd been at my heels constantly. The season, and also because I always said that it was much more about family man, leader. Season two was very much about the clash of ideologies between the two leaders, the two alpha males. But he was sidetracked because of Carl and the gunshot. I do think that she gave consent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think it was... I don't blame her for... You know, it was... He came at me.
Of course.
You know, that's... And also, I thought it had been resolved. I thought that we'd had it out and we could work through it. That was a beautiful thing about playing those scenes with John, is that it's about two guys that are like brothers and, you know, would die for each other under any other circumstances, but they can't live. They can't work it out. They just can't work it out.
Like every scene, just for the audience, every scene where you guys were together before, you sort of admitted, like, well, of course I knew you guys got together. Yeah. I'm not an idiot.
Yeah.
But every scene where you stood together was almost like being in high school, like, oh my God, they don't even know.
Someone said that to me as well. Someone said it was
so
like
uncomfortable.
So excruciating watching it because you're like, oh, I feel kind of dirty.
It's every guy's like worst.
Yeah, I know.
Like non-lethal nightmare of like he fucking went.
Yeah, I know.
He's right there, my best friend.
I know. But I thought, you know, John, when we were doing the scenes, it's beautiful what he did. It was so complex, you know, the torn love loyalty that he had as well, you know, and trying to deal with that secret, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was, he's, you know. He's such a good actor, John. You know, and Sarah as well. It's awesome. Everybody is, actually. But playing those scenes out was such fun, you know. Such fun.
This is sort of a weird question, but do you feel like Rick maybe absorbs a little bit of everyone that he kills? Like, when you take someone's life, does he absorb a little bit of Shane?
No, well, I think he carries this... Interestingly, I was just answering that. I think the difference between the Governor and Rick is that every death costs Rick, and I think the Governor possibly has found some way of making peace with the world, or he's rationalized it, that it doesn't have the same impact. And I think that, I think that he has probably adapted into his, modus operandi, you know, a more instinctive brutality that is very Shane, which is certainly in episode two, you see this. He just makes a judgment call that is, it's not even in question. He's become, it's uncompromising, which I think is a movement certainly towards Shane's camp. But I don't know necessarily if, interestingly, I did hold his gun after I killed him for the whole... You won't know this, but this is weird stuff I do. But I said, I don't want to let go of his gun. And so I'm holding onto his gun all the way through till the end of the season. After I killed him, the whole thing, I'm just holding his gun.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you feel like Rick broke at the end of last season, or did he just get like a clarity, like, all right, it's on now? I mean, just telling everyone basically sit down and shut up.
That's it. I think he actually excelled himself as a leader in the most difficult circumstances, when he'd been snubbed by his wife, cold-shouldered by everybody, everybody's falling apart, and he just goes, this is the only way.
I think I even said on our show, like, will everyone get off Rick's dick? Like, they're like, how could you?
What do you want from him? You know, it is, and it was, you know, and that's, and certainly for that, you know, with all the sort of, this isn't a democracy anymore, that's just a wake-up, but that's just, hey, it's great leadership just to say, wake up.
Right.
We're going to die. We're on the run again. Everybody, you want to go? Go. But this is the way we survive. And the wonderful thing is that because of this time frame, you realize that it's not even an issue anymore. Nobody's died. He is the leader. You know, and I think that that, it was very much a, I think it was a great judgment call, just because he saw people falling out, mm-hmm. falling apart, coming into orbit. They were just, the shock was starting to, you know, set in. Because bear in mind, there was a whole family that had never been attacked and never been on the run before.
Right.
You know, and they'd just been, two of them had been killed, and the rest were just floundering, you know. So, and he didn't have Shane, he didn't have, I mean, he has the soldier there, Daryl, who's, but he hadn't sort of aligned himself yet. You know, they're close, but he wasn't getting backup, you know. Right. So he was sort of alone. And I think that it was a brutal decision and a brutal call, but it was a necessary one.
And Rick,
I'll defend him to the hilt. You will not get me.
You know, you have to.
Because that's my job.
You have to.
It's my job as an actor. You defend your character. You fight for your character. You carry it like a sword, you know?
Yeah, because from your character's point of view, everything you're doing is good. I mean, like, at least from your point of view.
Or right.
That's a better way to put
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And then the idea of, you know, well, Lori's pregnant and, you know, no one really knows. No one really knows, and like
I know.
I think I made a joke like, well, if the baby comes out of Lori and goes into Andrea, we know it's Shane's. But he's accepted, like, this is his family now, so that's not even really an issue anymore, is it?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, it's a huge, I mean, what a guy, what a man to be able to do that, to the selflessness of it as well. It's amazing that he just goes, whatever. But they're forced into this situation. You know, they probably would have divorced many, many, you know, moons ago.
Yeah, because there were hints in flashback that, like, things weren't great anymore and they'd sort of drifted apart.
But Sarah just said a great thing. And she said they love each other sort of at a cellular level, mm-hmm. which I think is right. They've known, they were young sweetheart. They've got history. Mm-hmm. This is what I've realized more and more about doing this job is that you share a common history, and that's all that's left.
Yeah.
You know, and the kid, you know, the thing I loved about the road is that they're forgetting words like birds. They don't mean anything anymore in the road. And I think that it's so vital. That's why they have to stay together. Because they have the life before still. They have the memory of the life before.
Right. And the more people they can connect to, the more of their world they can connect to.
Yeah, well, I suppose. You know, and also just for the sake of, it's always about new life as well. What a beauty, you know, it's the greatest thing. If we can have this baby, save this baby, it's future.
Right. What do you think you've learned as an actor in the last couple of years
I just, I can't daily learn, you know. I love working in this country. It's been one of the great joys and sort of privileges to work and inhabit a role in the South as well. Working and living in the South is an amazing thing.
You know? Oh yeah, but great accent, by the way. I know everyone brings this up because you have such a lovely British accent, which is very nice to our American ears.
Yeah.
But then you just kind of slide into Rick.
Yeah.
Where did the accent come from?
Well, I work with a dialect coach. I obviously when I got the role, I was a huge admirer of AMC and the work that they produce, I and also the team involved. I didn't, you know, I wanted to get it right. I didn't just want to get it right. I didn't want it to be a problem.
Yeah.
You know, because I see sometimes people, certainly from England as well, come over here and you see them just doing an accent
right.
for the first season, if they're lucky enough to get it. Say, you know what, and I just didn't want that. I had zombies to worry about, you know what I mean? We've got more important things to worry. And so I just decided to stay in dialect, and actually this feels sort of, I'm not sure how convincing this accent feels, because I only do it for press, you know.
Sure.
then I go back to, my wife thinks I'm crazy, but then I just stay in dialect for pretty much 90% of the time I work, because it's filmed and shot down there, and it helps to be in the rhythm. There were a couple of guys who came and interviewed me that I met before at Comic Cons and things. And I just, because I was working, and I just said, oh, let's do it. And I did it in dialect, and they were freaking out. They were like, what are you doing? You know, and I just went, well, this is what I do when I'm at work. Because also, lots of people that are on set I don't break from dialect because it helps. It's just that I put my boots on, I put my gun on, and you know, and then I stay in dialect. It makes it easier to do.
Well, it works, so why would you...
Hey, but yeah, it works. But also saying that, there are amazing actors that don't and can flip in and out. I'm just not one of those actors.
What do you like to do? I know I just got the 1 minute thing, so just give me a sec. What do you... And then Brandon's going to come out and ask you spoiler questions.
Yeah.
I kind of... I know you have a family, and so you spend a lot of time with your family when you're not working, but do you have a thing for you? Do you have a hobby? Is there a thing that you enjoy that you just like... That you can just kind of make everything else drift away.
I surf, yeah.
You do?
Yeah, I go out and surf, and I just kind of go and people and just because it's quiet, and also there's something, I don't know. I love surfing, but also sport. I mean, family. I'm just a family man. I go home and I be dad, you know. And
yeah.
And it's great. We've just moved outside of London. We've made the move, and we've got a lovely place and in the countryside, and I just kind of plant trees.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, man. I'm into trees. I'm a tree hugger. And I don't know. It's embarrassing. I'm starting to sweat because I don't like talking about
it. You shouldn't embarrass at all. It's nice, especially with the intensity of your job.
Yeah, I just kind of chilled out. That's the thing is people keep... Kurtman goes, you should do a romantic comedy and blah, blah, blah. And this is such a commitment to me. And it's so all-consuming for me that... And also for my wife and... We bring the family over, and so she takes the load, and I just want to, you know, and also I want to see my kids, man,
sure,
you know, that I will work on something soon, I think, because they're making this such a rewarding job. I don't know if there hasn't been anything that's really grabbed me yet.
Well, it's just nice. I mean, I think, you know, as an actor, this is probably one of those jobs that everyone dreams of getting,
yeah.
And I think the important thing is just, like, it's gonna go by so fast. It's just, that's like, it. Enjoy it while you can.
That's it. That's what I said to John Bernthal and Sarah. I just said, let's have fun and not miss this.
Yeah. Because someday you look back and go, man, that was fun. That was really
I'm telling intense. You, this is the wildest ride that I've ever been on in my life. And everybody feels it. And I also just think that the environment, the bubble that we've got down there that you've seen... is one of the rarest environments. I love this crew, and if I feel like I can risk in front of this crew,
yeah.
And everybody else feels the same. All the new actors that have come this season, it's wild because they come and they go, "Oh, we're doing that," and you know, because sometimes you just clock in and clock out with the job. You can't do it in this job,
yeah,
because you get found out.
Well, not only that, but and this will just be the last thing, and we'll wrap it up. But the you know, at the end of last season, I remember watching the finale and then going to an after party, and Kirkman was there, and I was like, wow, that was really great. And he goes, man, I'm already on season 3.
Yeah,
and he goes,
yeah.
And I have to tell you, he said very sincerely, the energy that caught, like, the last 5 episodes of season 2, he said season 3 starts there,
yeah.
And it's fucking insane, and then it goes up
from
there.
Hold on to your hats, is all I'll say. We start with we break out of these blocks and we just keep running. I mean, and it's been astonishing seeing the scripts come through and how they keep loading the pressure, but also the scale. I think the scale of this show across, certainly to the episodes that we've just shot, is huge.
Yeah.
You know, the ambition of it is magnificent, and that's why this crew are just beyond me. That they keep putting their bodies on the line for this thing.
Well, Andrew Lincoln, it is a pleasure to see you. Thank
yeah,
you so much.
It's
I mean,
a great
honestly,
pleasure.
so nice. Every time, the couple times we've gotten
yeah,
to talk.
Yeah, I know. And, likewise, it's
and,
great.
And enjoy this time off while you're here in Los Angeles,
yeah.
And it's a little cushier.
Thank you.
Because it's gonna be crazy when you go back.
Yeah, it will. Thanks, Chris.
That was great.
Yeah, likewise, great.
I'll see you. I'll be at the premiere tonight.
Yay, I hope you enjoy it. Man.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Cheers.
Good to see you.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today.
Yeah.
Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet.
Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.